Koenig. I appear on behalf of Lorraine Fielder. Let me begin by reminding the court that in this jurisdiction, in attorney's fees cases, any doubt is resolved for the party whose legal position is in question and against someone who is trying to assess attorney's fees. I want to focus on two or three matters. First, the court decided that it would not receive my affidavit into evidence on the ground that the contents of the affidavit were irrelevant. So the question before the court was whether or not we had a legitimate basis for bringing this action. And my affidavit identifies that basis in paragraphs 9, 10, and 11, clearly state why we brought this action.
Mr. Koenig, help me with this, because
yes.
I've had problems with this case.
Right.
It seems to me, from my reading of this case, that the court does not disagree with you that you had a legitimate reason for bringing this action. And that is why your affidavit is not relevant. But at some point in time, after depositions were taken, it should have been aware to you that the case needed to be dismissed.
I disagree with that.
Because the reason I think that is because he didn't give the full award of attorney's fees.
Well, that is true that he didn't give the full award, but let me see if I can change your mind, Your Honor.
All right.
The affidavit, we also stated that it was necessary to bring the will contest because if we hadn't done so, the will would have been probated and, you know, my client would have lost any bequest or anything that she might have gotten from it. But we also were bringing, and this is an important aspect of this, we were also contending that we wanted to establish a tort that has not been established yet in the state of Nebraska. And that tort is intentional interference with an expected inheritance. And the law, while we don't have that here yet, the law in many jurisdictions that do have it state that you have to exhaust all probate remedies in order to bring that action. Well, if at that point I had dismissed the case, I could always argue that I hadn't exhausted my remedies. So I felt like I had to pursue that. So that is my response. And so when the court rejected my affidavit, which identified our reasons for bringing the action, then the court turned around and said, you brought the action frivolously. Well, if that's not an abuse of discretion, I don't know what could be. Because first he prohibits me from putting in the basis, and then he says you have no basis. Well, I mean, if as I said a moment ago, I think that's an abuse of discretion. Secondly, the court also fastened onto a letter that the personal representatives put into evidence, which contained a portion of a letter that was a letter from me to opposing counsel. And the court said that we couldn't do anything we wanted, and therefore he was going to award attorney's fees. First of all, the letter is inadmissible under Rule 408. I don't think there's any question about that. I would ask the court to look at your decision in Preble versus Coinsen, 11 Nebraska Appellate 199. evidence of conduct or statements made in compromise negotiations are inadmissible. The statute says that. The case law says that. If you look at that excerpt from the court's order from my letter, it states that this is an effort to settle the case. They put it into evidence. The court received it, or I think it was contained in an affidavit.
Wasn't it relevant to whether or not your cause of action was frivolous?
Makes no difference whether it's relevant, Your Honor. It is inadmissible as a matter of law. And the court should not have considered it. It's not admissible.
At some point, and here's where I'm troubled.
Yes.
Okay. At some point, either during or after discovery ended, and then going to the hearing on the motion for summary judgment.
Yeah.
Did it not? Did it not come into your mind that under Nebraska law we don't have a case? I don't even have, other than my own affidavit, anything to show up at the motion, at the hearing on the motion for summary judgment, and that I have an opportunity at this point to dismiss the case, or else I have the possibility. Mm-hmm. That the court's going to find that this action was frivolous and I'm going to get hit with attorney's fees.
The personal representatives talk about that a lot. I guess they think that if you go to a hearing on a motion for summary judgment and don't adduce evidence, that you automatically lose, or that it is frivolous. That is not the law.
But when you show up at the hearing on the motion for summary judgment and you don't have anything to offer after discovery is completed other than your own affidavit, isn't that some indication to you that there's a problem?
Your Honor, there is more than that. I would like you to look at C versus Prairie Fields Family Medicine, 287 Nebraska at 668, came down about a year ago in 2014. The failure to adduce evidence does not necessarily mean that summary judgment will be granted against somebody. In that case, the trial court ruled that the plaintiff had failed to create an issue of fact, that the defendant had disclosed a diagnosis that the plaintiff was HIV positive to a third party, and she adduced no evidence on that. But the Supreme Court said, if you look, they reversed the trial court's decision granting summary judgment. The Supreme Court said that you can look to the pleadings. You can look. Does that mean I've only got 2 minutes left? You can look to the pleadings. I always talk too much. You can look to the pleadings and you consider circumstantial evidence. In this case, we pleaded this. We pleaded that Gary Juergens had his stepmother's power of attorney, that he had created a confidential relationship with her. On the basis of that, he sold $1 million worth of real estate that was supposed to go to Jan Litherland, Lorene Fielder's sister, and then he took the money and he put it in two accounts in which he and his sister took two-thirds of. Now, that was before the court. That is what we pleaded. The court knew that. It was part of the pleadings. You know that when a court considers whether or not to grant summary judgment or not, the court can consider the pleadings. That was in the pleadings. So, it was not frivolous. And I didn't need to adduce any evidence on the motion to summary judgment to defeat it, because that should have defeated it.
Let me ask you this.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did you have a right prior to appearing at the hearing on the motion for summary judgment to dismiss your case?
Did I have the ability?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
May it please the court, I am Patricia Vinoy of Matthew McLaughlin on behalf of the appellees and cross-appellants Gary Jurgens and Velda Lenners. I'm not sure that this is allowed, but could I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal on the cross-appeal?
They say no.
That's fine.
Sorry.
Give me an A for effort on that, though.
As you know, this is a fairly simple appeal. There's only two assignments of error on the appeal and one on the cross-appeal. And it's important to note that the standard here is abuse of discretion. The crux of the case is when the trial courts should judge whether a case is frivolous or in bad faith, when they're deciding if they should order fees under NEB Rev Stat 25-824 sub 2. In other words, what lens do they use? Appellant argues that determination is made solely in reference to the initial filing of a complaint. However, Nebraska case law is much broader than that. It interprets this statute as applying to any frivolous position taken at any point in the case, which, as is explained in Zimmerman versus First Tier Bank, that's any legal position wholly without merit, without rational argument based on law and evidence.
So is it frivolous to try to establish a new unrecognized cause of action in the state?
I don't believe it is, and that's actually explicit in the statute under subsection 5 or 4, 2, I believe, but in any case, I think what's important here is the record in this case, and Mr. Koenig would like to talk about all sorts of other matters that weren't in front of the trial court, aren't in front of this court here, were never judicially noticed. There is a copy of a draft complaint attached to a pleading, which I noticed this morning, but it's unsigned, unfiled, it's not sworn, there's no authentication. There's no proper presentation of that issue and why this case would need to lead to that one. There's also no explanation of why Ms. Fielder would need to file this case to present or set up a claim by her sister, which...
So you're saying she didn't have standing in the first place?
I just think a prerequisite to file a will contest to assert some tort claim, then the same person needs to fulfill that prerequisite. And there's no explanation of why one person can fulfill it for somebody else or how that might be valid.
So if the plaintiff, the appellant, had dismissed the lawsuit prior to the hearing on the motion for summary judgment, do you agree that, number one, they'd had a right to do that, and number two, that would have solved the problem?
I agree they'd have a right to do it. I think they may have needed the trial court's permission to do it, but I don't think we would have thought that.
Don't they have a right to dismiss without prejudice at any time prior to submission to a jury?
I think that's correct.
So they could have done that,
mm-hmm.
Correct?
Mm-hmm. And the second part of your question was?
Would that have solved the frivolous problem?
I think in many cases it would. Here we would still have the issue of the letter sent just a few weeks after the complaint was filed and answered. And I think that letter actually shows, as the trial court recognized, that the plaintiff's true purpose was delay or harassment, which the Nebraska Supreme Court has recognized that as a grounds for ordering fees as well.
How do you respond to Mr. Koenig's argument that letter should never have been received into evidence?
I would respond by saying that he didn't object at the trial court level, and that I believe his objection was on Rule 408 or as a settlement.
It was evidence of a settlement negotiation.
But that's a very limited exclusion, and it really only applies, if I remember correctly, to evidence that a person might be admitting liability, and that's not what that letter does.
If it's broader than that, is it possible to encompass this letter?
I'm not sure I understand your
question. Well, if your recollection of what that exception is different than mine.
Well, this is the first time this exception came up today, and I think that then the fallback would be, there was no objection made at the trial court.
Right, I understand that one, but, okay, go ahead.
Okay. I think I would draw your attention to the case, the 1990 case, Peterson versus Don Peterson and Associates. And that's a case where the Nebraska Supreme Court ordered that fees had to be paid, where, just like here, a party was opposing summary judgment but didn't advance any evidence or theory. And that was a proper grounds for ordering fees. There are lots of dust kicked up here. Appellant claims that she filed this action initially because her mother's will, at least in the briefs, her mother's will, because her mother had given power of attorney to Gary Jorgens in 2006. And then in 2011, the farm was sold and money put into the decedent's own bank accounts. All those things occurred years after this will was executed in 2004. So ultimately, even giving them every benefit of the doubt, those facts don't justify a conclusion or an inference that there was undue influence or testamentary capacity issues in 2004.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. Because the way I understand it, mm-hmm. the property, the real estate, was to go to one group of heirs, mm-hmm. and when it was sold, the money was placed into an account that didn't go to those same heirs under the will.
That's correct.
And the person who did that did it for their own benefit.
The person who did that did it under, as a power of attorney, under the decedent's, she was still alive then, her express instructions.
I understand that's his position. Mm-hmm. And but to the outsider looking at it, you have to understand, or I would think you would understand, that that raises all kinds of red flags. At least it did in my mind. I mean, I'm not saying you did anything wrong. Don't misunderstand me. I'm just saying I can understand why the people that were not getting the property that the will says they're going to get are now all of a sudden not getting it. Wait a minute. What's happened?
I could understand that's something that maybe needs to be explored, and it has been explored in a different case. But with regard to the claims asserted here for undue influence or testamentary capacity, they aren't issues that are related to those. And the court, that case is actually on appeal with the Nebraska Supreme Court right now. Those claims were dismissed as well.
So that's a separate lawsuit.
It's a separate issue and a separate lawsuit.
Can we talk about your claim for fees?
Yes.
Would you agree that the time that was spent through discovery would be time that was spent legitimately defending the case and trying to find out if there was a controversy or if there was a material question of fact and those kinds of things, and it would be then mainly the time after the decision was made to file the motion for summary judgment, and then going and preparing and going to the hearing, and that chunk of time would be what you would contend is based on something being frivolous? Or I guess another way to answer is why is it your position that you're entitled to all of the attorney's fees that were expended mm-hmm. in defense of this case?
This case, to be honest, from the beginning felt like a wild goose chase, and we've had to figure out what was at issue and what was going on. In my humble experience, it's harder to respond to a case that is less clear, makes less sense than it is to a case that's pretty well spelled out. So on our cross appeal, our position is that once the trial judge, who has a discretion, abuse of discretion standard here, once they determined that everything was fair and reasonable, they should have ordered, under the statute, they shall order those reasonable fees.
But didn't I know the judge gave you half, but wasn't it basically his contention that, you know, the first half was a legitimate expenditure of trying to decide what was going on, but at some point somebody should have known that the case didn't have merit, and it was from that point on that really the attorney's fees were supposed to address.
It may be that that's the conclusion he drew. I don't think that's spelled out in the order. So it's difficult to discern what discretion was exercised there.
Okay. I looked at the exhibit that contained the itemized time that was spent. I didn't take a calculator to it and do it to the decimal point, but it appeared to me that two-thirds of the time was spent up to that point where somebody might say, there's a problem here, and then the last third was maybe to get the summary judgment and that, and yet you got the judge awarded 50% as opposed to one-third. So is it your position that it should have been from day one? Is that what it is?
Yes. Okay. Once the judge determined that was reasonable and that the case was frivolous, both on the basis of the letter, which was at the very beginning of the case, and on the basis of the response to summary judgment, then once the fees were reasonable, they should have been ordered.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Koenig have left? 34 seconds.
Your Honor, with respect to the letter and whether I objected or not, I tell you that the Pribble case says I don't need to object. I'd ask you to look at that, but I don't think I needed to object. With respect to that letter, the court below did not even know what statute I'm referring to. As a matter of fact, the statute says, and you all recognize that, that we can seek a modification, an extension, or an outright reversal of existing law at any time, and we can also seek to establish a new tort. We have a right to do that. We have an absolute right. That's it. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. And your case is submitted, and we are adjourned. Thankfully, it's awfully warm in here, right? Sorry about that. Your only consolation is that we're warmer than you are because we have to wear these.